Welcome to democracyonthemove.org, a podcast tribute to the people and organizations who dare to reimagine our nation and drive it toward its true democratic principles. Content for this episode was recorded on Sunday, January 17, 2021. I'm Dan Schaefer, producer of this podcast, and thank you for joining us today. In last week's podcast, I talked about Julian Assange and censorship. My bottom line on Assange is that he is guilty. In my few online discussions over this matter, I've learned this opinion doesn't resonate so well. Lots of people passionately disagree with this position. Surprisingly, people from both the left and the right disagree with me. This could be one of those rare topics that actually unites people on the left and the right, although perhaps for different reasons. I had also voiced my thoughts on censorship. Should social media companies be allowed to censor our voices? On this, there is agreement between the left and the right as well. Both sides feel that they're being targeted for unreasonable censorship. Perhaps that is the case, but up to this point, nobody really has offered a solution that works for both sides. Further complicating this issue, they each think that their side is bearing more of the burden. From my perspective, I really don't know if one side is getting censored more than the other. I have invited a guest on the right side of the political spectrum to appear on this podcast to describe her position on the matter. I do hope she takes me up on this offer because I'm deeply interested in what she has to say. So, what is the ultimate solution? Should the question of censorship be left to the courts to decide? I'm afraid this would politicize the courts more than they've already been, but honestly, I don't know who or what else to turn to. I agree that leaving it in the hands of the social media companies puts corporations in charge of our censorship. I arrive at this conclusion because I believe that messages we send out into cyberspace belong to the person making the statement, not the corporations whose digital platforms host those messages. For example, you're listening to this podcast that's being served by a company called Podbean. They host podcasts from all over the political spectrum, as well as any topic you can imagine, and as of yet, they've not censored me. Nor do I believe they should censor me. Or anyone else, for that matter. But there's one major caveat. So long as I'm not breaking our laws, I should be allowed to say whatever I want. I would, for example, break the law if I said something about someone that is not true. That would be called slander. Or I could incite violence by encouraging people to do harm to a person or property. And if that person happened to be a politician, I could be accused of soliciting an insurrection. So I guess by now you know where I'm heading. Look, from time to time, nations fall, or they split apart, or they get reformed. This hasn't happened in the United States since its beginning, though it came close during the Civil War. But it should be noted that in the beginning, it was an insurrectionist movement that gave birth to our nation. Was it justified? Well, it's easy these days to believe it was justified because in the end we created a new nation with a new idea called democracy. Democracy is now a very popular idea all over the world. Keep in mind, however, that in the moment of our founding, there was not a common consensus on creating a new nation. But once it happened, and the nation's founders planted the roots of democracy deep in fertile soil, a new nation grew, and generation after generation was taught the romantic notion that it was justified from the beginning. Well, what does this have to do with censorship? Consider that in the years leading up to our revolution, newspapers and pamphlets became increasingly polarized. Whereas they traditionally devoted equal printed real estate to opposing political views, this quickly gave way to opinionated news as tensions between the colonies and Great Britain grew. Publications like the Boston Gazette and the Boston Chronicle squared off with one another over what was known as imperial reform. Basically, the Gazette became a colonist patriot paper, the Chronicle sided with the British. What started as a difference of political opinion suddenly became highly polarized and turned violent. The violence ranged from being beaten with a cane to an outright revolution bathed in blood. Now, would censorship at that time quell the violence? Would it have stopped the revolution? I seriously doubt it, but it's difficult to deny the power of the written word. And it's difficult to deny that people can be motivated to take some really drastic actions based upon words. It's widely believed that the printing press was an essential factor in pushing the colonists toward a revolution, even if it wasn't sufficient to actually cause the revolution. Never underestimate the power of words. What stands out in my mind regarding the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6 is not so much the audacity of the people to actually attempt to take over our government, but that these people really had no legitimate reason for doing so. Okay, so before you turn off this podcast, let me rephrase. People do have legitimate reasons to be upset with our government. The list of reasons goes on and on. I believe the most important of these reasons is the social and economic inequality that has flourished in our country for many decades. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and politicians perpetuate this disparity by doing the bidding of big corporations. The financial crisis of 2008 really burns in my mind as a classic example of socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. People are rightfully upset and threatened by this disparity. But these were not the people that attacked the Capitol. The people that attacked the Capitol were convinced, through messages sent out over social media, that the recent election was stolen. There's been no evidence found to support this idea. Surprisingly, even William Barr, President Trump's personal pick for Attorney General, who has acted with great fealty toward him, concluded that there indeed was no evidence. So any notion of the election being stolen was manufactured in the catacombs of social media and amplified in the traditional media. So here we are. The power of the written word is used once again to motivate an insurrection, but the insurrection was hollow. It had no real lasting purpose. It was not waged over the real issues bothering the country, but over the fiction of a stolen election. So again, how does censorship play into this? Well, could censorship have quelled this insurrection? Personally, I think it would have. The central argument for the American Revolution was the cruel treatment of a distant governing body rendered through unfair taxation and severely limited representation. That revolution would not have been stopped by censorship because it had a firm foundation in long-standing common grievances. This foundation was solid enough to motivate citizen soldiers to wage a bloody extended war against a world superpower. By the same token, a modern revolution or insurrection motivated by the forces of the 99%, along with other social movements based on gross inequities in our society, such as Black Lives Matter, could indeed serve as a solid foundation for a revolution. Although I think that's highly unlikely, because a vast majority of people in these movements seek to work through the system, not to destroy it. So I'm going to propose a couple of big ifs here. If you agree that messages on social media motivated this hollow insurrection, and if you agree that censorship could have at least mitigated the violent outcome, we're still left with a central question. How can censorship itself be justified? And how could it be implemented? Well, I have to admit, I'm still struggling with those questions. Central to my struggle are these questions. Was there a single message that motivated the attack on the Capitol? Was it Trump's speech on the Mall prior to the attack? Was it Rudy Giuliani when he said trial by combat? Well, taken in isolation, I suspect not. Not entirely, anyway. But it's the culmination of many, many messages from many sources, not the least of which was the president. For example, it's well known that candidate Trump back in 2016 promoted violence at his rallies. If you see someone getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of them, Trump famously said. I'll pay the legal fees. Well, as I said, words inspire actions, and by saying this, Trump probably should have been censored for inciting violence. The problem is that, over the past 5 years, these types of statements have an additive effect. It results in real action, just as the pre-revolutionary newspapers inspired action at our nation's birth. After a while, people will take action. It's not surprising. It's human nature. But it's impractical to censor someone in real time while giving a speech at a rally. You can't, for example, stop someone from running into a crowded movie theater and yelling fire. But you can slap that person with legal consequences after the fact. Here's an example. Recently, Sidney Powell, one of the president's lawyers that recently tried to nullify the 2020 presidential election, accused Dominion voting systems of sabotaging their machines to count votes illegally. This apparently crossed a line. Ms. Powell is now being made to pay for her transgression. She's being sued for $1.3 billion for her slanderous comments against Dominion. Apparently, she now has to furnish proof to back up her claims. I'm pretty confident that she will not be successful. Though I hesitate to allow corporations to get involved in matters of censorship, I have to agree that suffering legal consequences is a step in the right direction. Overall, censorship is a dicey subject. You can't stop, nor do you want to stop, freedom of speech. That concept is so important that it is enshrined in our First Amendment, along with the right to a free press. But the First Amendment doesn't give you the right to incite violence. It doesn't give you the right to get a crowd of people all worked up based on false pretenses to commit an act of insurrection. It doesn't give you the right to lie about someone's personal character. And it doesn't give you the right to threaten someone. Some form of censorship is needed to prevent violence and slander. It may take the form of legal consequences, or it may take the form of deplatforming a malicious user on a social media account, or it may be a reporter fact-checking a politician in real time and calling a liar, or a combination thereof. As to how it gets implemented, well, that's something I think we're just going to have to struggle with for a very long time. It will evolve, and it will never be perfect. But that shouldn't discourage us from trying to find a common framework that doesn't defer our First Amendment rights to a corporate decision. As a final thought, allow me to share with you why I feel so passionately about this topic. Here it is. You can't have democracy without truth. And you can't have truth when facts are buried beneath layers of lies and baseless conspiracy theories. Censorship can help clarify the truth, but censorship is a blunt instrument to be sure, and it may well do more harm than good unless it's used judiciously, transparently, and without prejudice. Well, that's it for this week. You've been listening to Democracy on the Move, a tribute to all those people and organizations who dare to reimagine our nation and drive it back to its true democratic principles. Please tune in each week where we will try to feature guests and definitely feature topics that will help keep you in touch with our march toward a more perfect union. If you have any suggestions for stories and or people you think we should cover at Democracy on the Move, please contact us through our website contact page at democracyonthemove.org/contact or send us an email at info@democracyonthemove.org. You can also comment on our Twitter page at All on the Move. If you find today's podcast interesting and informative, please tell your friends and family about us. And if you would like to help sponsor the podcast at Democracy on the Move, please contact us through the website or email. I'm Dan Schaefer, producer of the podcast, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. It's been my pleasure to be with you today. Please have a safe week ahead, and we hope you'll tune in to our next show.